and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. I'm John Curtis, and every week I'm joined by one of the wonderful members of the team at the EV Cafe. This week is no exception. We've got the most wonderful Sarah Sloman. Greetings, Sarah.
What an absolute pro. For anybody that wants to know, I just messed up that intro, but luckily John's here. So yeah, you're stuck with me for this episode. Thanks, John.
Right, well, every week we also get to talk to innovators, pioneers and collaborators in our industry. And today is no exception. We have the quite remarkable Tom Rowlands from Corpe. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks. Great to be here. I can confirm that Sarah did mess up that intro.
So
that
a lot.
That was entertaining.
I have to admit my faults.
Now, Tom, you're Global MD at Corpe, which means necessarily that you are all over the place. We spoke to you earlier in the week and you're in Helsinki. Where are you today?
I'm luckily in London today, so back home. And yes, now I'm Global MD of EV Solutions, not just yes. Global MD of everything, although that would be fun also. But yes, no, back in London. But yeah, we have offices in Berlin, in Helsinki, Stockholm, Atlanta, and here in London. Wow. So yeah, all over the place.
Now, we talk about Corpe, and this is a name which some of our listeners may think, not familiar with them. But you will be familiar with some of the brands that Corpe work and own. Tell us about them. What does Corpe do? And then what are those brands that are relevant to our industry?
Yeah, no, so Corpe is kind of an umbrella brand, I guess, that has bought up a lot of local brands that are probably better known to many people in the industry. So Corpe really is a niche payments business, I guess, and we work across a couple of different verticals. So we have our corporate payments business, which does kind of FX and domestic payments. We have our vehicle and mobility business, which does fuel card payments and obviously EV payments. So that's where I sit. And then we also have what's called our lodging business, which is similar to a fuel card, but really for hotels. So if you go to a hotel, you can pay using our lodging payments and you get kind of discounts and all those kind of things. So bigger in the US, wow. Used by a lot of kind of government agencies. So if there's a hurricane and lots of government workers need putting up, then Corpe can help you get a hotel room. So wow. Those are some of the kind of areas that we work across, which is quite interesting.
This is why I love this podcast, because not only do I listen in to every single person we interview, because I learn so much about these companies that we're close to, right? You know, so glad that you're working with us on the EV Cafe. Now, I also know that you have a brand called Travel Card that's in the Netherlands, and you guys acquired Plug Surfing a year ago. Is that correct? Can you walk us through that acquisition? What happened?
Yeah, so Plug Surfing, which is the jumper that I'm wearing today. So we acquired it actually 2 years ago now. Time flies. So Plug Surfing is the reason why I was in Helsinki and why I occasionally go to Berlin and Stockholm. So Plug Surfing is a startup, or it was a startup, it's almost 14 years old now, that came out of Berlin. Interestingly, actually started in the same office as Hubject. So Plug Surfing and Hubject have a pretty kind of close relationship and kind of came were founded, I guess, at the same time. So we know Hubject really, really well through that. But what Plug Surfing does and aims to be is the best EMSP provider across all of Europe. So we've built a roaming network all across Europe and obviously the UK as well. And we provide that network to lots of different EMSPs. So whether that be OEMs, so Renault, Nissan, Polestar, all use that network, but also to our internal brands, importantly. So Allstar here in the UK leverages the Plug Surfing network via the Drive API. As does Travel Card, and we're actually migrating CCS, our check-based business, onto Drive API as well. And excitingly, we just founded, I don't know what the word is, Plug Surfing LLC in Delaware, so that we can take Plug Surfing stateside. So we'll be supporting our Comdata business as of Q1 next year.
No rest for the wicked. And also Mina, which was Ash Tate, our previous guest on this podcast, because Mina was one of those that really hit the market about 3 years ago, and that's for that sort of home charge reconciliation piece. And Ash Tate from Split the Bills fame is now very proudly sort of peddling your message as well. Now, if Paul Kirby was here, he'd say two things. One, acronym police. People listening in might not know what an EMSP is, or a CPO, or an OEM, or an API. Can you hit us with some clarifications?
Apologies. EMSP, so e-mobility service provider, is that one. API, don't actually know what that stands for. What does API stand for?
It's standalone.
Keep talking. I'm going to find out.
Okay. John, you find that one out. CPO, charge point operator, and OEM, basically a auto manufacturer of vehicles.
Thank you. Application programming interface. Now, that's not what I would... I'm glad that wasn't live TV. It's just a live podcast instead. Otherwise, I'd have got that horribly wrong too.
And I think API is a more useful term than the full...
I do too. Although it does denote the fact that you can tailor and scale. That's the beauty of the beautiful thing about APIs. The other thing that Paul Kirby would definitely say, going back to the sort of acquisition of Corpay, Allstar, and now Mina, and all those other fantastic brands that have enabled your incredibly flexible, wide-reaching platform, when your business is expanding like that, and the new announcement in Delaware too, you still have this incredible sort of startup feel to your business. That startup mentality runs through from end to end. And we were talking about you this morning before we joined, and Paul's away and can't be here. And he wanted to know how does that culture still exist when it's so sprawling?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And you mentioned Ash, and it's a shame he was on before me, because it's hard to follow Ash, as I regularly have to do, because he's so great. But I think it's actually those acquisitions that have enabled us to keep that going. So I started the EV team within Corpay 4.5 years ago now, because before that I was the kind of head of strategy and working on, you know, various bits and pieces before I kind of doubled down on the EV side of things. So that was kind of easy, I guess, to have the flexible startup mentality, because there was two or three of us, right? And I was on the phones, I was doing product, I was doing operations, I was kind of doing everything. So that was kind of easier. But through the acquisitions, I think they've actually helped us, because we've acquired effectively startups. Plugsurfing has a very startup mentality, right? Based in Berlin, everyone feels like they're in a startup, they're in their own office. So we don't kind of impose a kind of corporate structure on them in that way. Obviously, InfoSec and compliance and other things, you know, just come with the territory with a big corporate. But beyond that, we try to kind of keep it, you know, relatively similar to the culture that was there before. And then Mina, I think, has really helped us in the UK, because Ash and Chris and Andy, all the founders of Mina, really had such a great culture within that business. And they are now a big part of our business in terms of how the management structure. So Ash kind of runs the UK EV side of things. Chris actually is helping me on the Plugsurfing side of things. So he's our kind of commercial guy on the Plugsurfing side of things. And then Andy's actually running tech for our newest venture, which is called CVP, Consumer Vehicle Payments, which is using another one of our acquisitions, Pay by Phone, the parking app, where we're kind of putting all of our capabilities. So we've put EV charging into the Pay by Phone app actually only last week. So you can now go into the Pay by Phone app, you can pay to park, or you can pay to charge, similar to Plugsurfing. But we've also put in there MOT servicing and other servicing, because we also own a business called Epix OneLink, which is the link or the software between most leasing companies in the UK and garages in the UK. So we also have a garage network similar to our fuel network or EV network. So Andy's now a big part of consumer vehicle payments, which is also kind of an exciting venture. All of that to say, I think bringing these types of people into the business helps change the broader culture and helps kind of keep that kind of startup mentality going. And then the final thing I'll say is actually, maybe it's too suck-up-y, but my boss kind of gives us the room to, you know, innovate and kind of keeps some of that kind of corporate structure kind of away from us to allow us to be a little bit more startup-y. But obviously, from the outside, it always looks rosy. On the inside, there is plenty of kind of corporate governance to manage, which is a big part of my job to kind of keep that away from the teams, I guess.
My question, Tom, is how you cope as a human being, because you know, you've talked about so many different businesses, and we all know, I mean, we're a startup in many ways, 4 years into our journey, and it's hellish just managing a few people and trying to get traction and develop good systems and approaches and relationships and all that stuff. It's tough. So running one startup is incredibly tiring. How do you cope with managing all of this stuff?
It's a good question. Well, one, I enjoy it, which obviously helps. You know, that I think that's point number one. If you don't enjoy it, then it's gonna be very, very tough. But then number two, and again, it sounds a bit cliche, but I have good people working for me. You know, without Ash, without Chris, without Andy, without you know, Matt Waller, who kind of runs my product side of things, you know, these are people who are very driven. They can get across a lot of stuff. They can cover huge amounts of ground and don't need a huge amount of my time and kind of detailed direction. So I think having a really autonomous team who you trust and kind of just get on with things is incredibly helpful. And then in the US, I have two fantastic people who work for me, John Donahue and Emily Bupp. And again, I can kind of leave them to it, to kind of get on with it. And obviously they escalate things to me and I get involved in things and help set the strategy, but I don't have to be involved in the very kind of nitty-gritty day-to-day, because, you know, they're just so good at their jobs and I can kind of leave them to get on with it. So that, and also I guess working quite a lot does play into it. But yeah, those are the kind of big things for me.
And I guess we're into kind of commercial planning time at the moment as we come into a new calendar year. Have you got a sense yet of what 2025 looks like commercially for Corpay?
Yeah, another good question. And yes, we're right in the thick of budget season at the minute, which is challenging as well. I think it looks pretty good from an EV perspective. We're expecting lots of growth. We're seeing huge week on week and month on month growth in our volumes in the UK, which is, I think, testament to the turnaround we've also seen in the EV market generally in the UK. I think we've had a few really good months now in the UK, and I think we're starting to see that come through in terms of business performance from my side of things. The EU, I think, slightly less rosy, but still growing. Not growing as quickly as perhaps we'd thought maybe a couple of years ago, but still growing nicely. And then, you know, Plugsurfing also growing really well with, you know, some of those partners, because many of those partners that I mentioned, Renault, Nissan, Polestar, NIO, Zeekr, they're all putting out new vehicles, you know, new ex vehicles that people want, right? The Renault 5, you know, that's a really exciting car, and I think that will sell really well. The new Scenic that's just come out in the area, right? So there's plenty of new kind of stock getting out there that people are excited about. So that obviously all plays through into more users and more volume. So for us, I think it's looking, you know, it's looking really good. And when I was kind of thinking about, you know, this podcast and what we talk about, I think that's actually a really interesting trend for 2025, and it's been, I think, forced through 2024, but not necessarily a bad thing, is many EV companies and propositions starting to really think about how to become more viable from a commercial perspective. Because I think 2 or 3 years ago, plenty of money about, you didn't have to work too hard to get that money, and you could just build cool stuff, and that was great. But now investors are looking for, how does that play through as this becomes more mainstream, right? Because it's not, you know, it's not a niche thing anymore. It's pretty mainstream. So that's a big part of my pitch to my team. You know, we've got to become really interesting on a kind of standalone commercial basis.
And you appeal so widely. I've said before, it's such a known brand, such a trusted product, such a wide-reaching market offering. And then I know myself, I'm in strategy at Paythrough. We were a startup 15 years ago, but still in the payments sector now. And strategy is really only as good as your ability to communicate that. And you as a leader internally have got that balance of understanding what's happening in the business. And you use the phrase yourself as sort of shielding people from that more corporate mallet that we all know is there, but waiting to be slammed. But ultimately, that investment cycle is so fascinating at the moment. On the EV Cafe news just this morning, we were talking about the job losses being announced at various EV manufacturers and the knock-on impact that's having in the market and the messaging out there. Is EV going to happen? Is it going to go ahead or is it going to fall on its own? I don't believe for a second that it is going to fall or fail. And these contractions are actually quite normal in investment cycles. I'm calling it phoenixing. I'm watching businesses shrink before they grow. So they look like they're going down. They are not. And yep. With a huge beast like yours, I think things like the All-Star Charge Pass have really captured people's thoughts around the importance of an end-to-end solution.
Yeah, no, agree. And look, I think the job losses are obviously sad and tough, but they're just part of a normal business cycle, right? And I think if it wasn't EV, it wouldn't get so much noise and it wouldn't get so much attention, right? Because there's lots of job losses happening all over the place. This is not an EV specific thing. The market is tough generally, so there's plenty of job losses out there, and the ones that hit the news are obviously the EV one, and that suddenly means EV is going to fail. But it's actually just people tightening their belts and doing the kind of normal course of business stuff.
And we talk a lot about resilience on the EV Cafe and good mental health practices and being able to shoulder your work life, but also acknowledge and keep an eye on your private life. And you flippantly joke there about the hours that you're putting in. I'm sure you're putting in a lot of hours. And we also happen to know, Tom, that you're an ultra marathon runner. I just need to understand how you managed to fit all of that into a 24-hour day. There was a time where I used to say 8 hours for sleep, 8 hours for work, and 8 hours for whatever else you want to do. But looking at your time shift, I'm reckoning it's about 10 or 12 hours of work, 2 hours of running around, and I don't even know if you've got a balanced family life with that. How do you do it?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So I think mental health is really important. Actually, interestingly, ultra running and running and exercise is actually what keeps me sane, perfectly honestly. So if I have a problem or I'm struggling with work or whatever, going for a run actually often helps me figure that out, solve it. You know, my mind kind of goes blank and I go for the run and I kind of come back and I can figure it through. So if my teams want to go to the gym during the day or whatever, I've got absolutely kind of no issue with that because I actually think it helps. And I think for me, flexible working is important. So I don't mind putting the hours in, but it's when I put the hours in that kind of helps me. So, you know, if I go to the gym in the middle of the day, that's kind of fine. I'll get my work done at a different time. And yes, I do need to balance family life. So I've got two small kids. So between kind of 6 and 8, I'll be with them. I won't be doing any work. I'll be putting them to bed, reading the books, whatever. And then I can kind of come back to my work after that and, you know, do a bit of work in front of the sofa, not in front of the sofa, that would be weird, in front of the television on the sofa, and kind of work that through. And I'm given that flexibility by Corpay to do that. You know, equally, I can work at home and then go to the office when I want to go to the office and all those kind of things. So I think that flexibility, the exercise actually helps me, strangely enough. And yeah, I can kind of just make it work. But it's busy. That's for sure. It's definitely busy.
It certainly is. And one quick reflection from me about listening to you reminded me of something I saw, and I've been sent multiple times actually this week. You know, what does success look like to you? And to me, it looks like being able to be there for those moments with your family, with your kids, with your friends, the moments that your body needs to go out and do that exercise. And those days are just gone, being chained to your desk for 8 hours and sort of waiting for the clock watching to stop have just gone. I do quite like the idea of you sitting in front of your sofa, not looking at the telly. But yeah, no, thank you. I totally agree. Success is about having that balance.
Yeah, and look, I mean, again, my kids definitely help with that. Like the fact that they, when we get in a petrol car, they're very surprised and they're like, "What is this? Where's the battery?" My son's 3 and a half and he asks very funny questions. And when he gets to granddad's house and he's driving a petrol car, he's kind of like, My granddad got a petrol car. What's wrong with him? So that, you know, those things kind of make me laugh as well in terms of what we do. I think it's quite tangible, which is also, you know, helpful to me.
You're clearly a very balanced human being from what I've seen today, and I've spoken to you a few times, and I've always got that sense that you have your feet on the ground, that you are you do simple things really, really well. Who inspires you, Tom? Because you obviously inspire lots of people to deliver on their missions, and you spoke about the excellence that you have in your team. Who inspires you and has provided you with those arms that wrap around you to lift you up?
Yeah, who inspires me? I mean, lots of people inspire me. You know, there's the kind of traditional, you know, people who've been successful, you know, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and, you know, Elon Musk and all those people. But actually, strangely enough, the person who kind of inspired me first was actually my first boss, a guy called Mark Horgan, who was at the time an MD within Travelex, which is a kind of FX business, which is where I first worked straight out of university. And then he went on to become the CEO of Corpay. But he was the one who instilled in me this kind of thirst for looking across more than just kind of one area or one kind of, you know, hey, do you want to be in finance? Hey, do you want to be in HR? Hey, do you want to be in operations? Well, no, I actually want to kind of look across all these things and be involved in kind of many of those things. And he really helped me with that in terms of the first role that I had, which was more than anything carrying his bag, but also that then sort of seeing more than just one element of the business. And he was really tough as a boss, but he insisted on excellence. He really insisted on excellence in everything, and whether it was a PowerPoint presentation, whether it was financials, whatever it was, he was really on it. And that was the first experience I had of business. So that kind of instilling of excellence, innovating, seeing across lots of different types of business, that's what I guess led me to want to be in strategy, you know, similar to Sarah. Which allows you to see across more than just one area of the business, which then also led me to the kind of MD role, I guess, which then lets me see across various bits and pieces. But I don't really have one person who inspires me. Lots of people inspire me. Lots of people in our industry also, you know, inspire me. I was on listening when I was off camera to the EV piece. It wasn't the EV Cafe. It was.
You can say it's us. That's fine.
Well, no, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I was going to say Paul Kirby first, but that group. You had that group of people on the photo, right? Of that yeah. You were then doing your.
Oh yeah.
Typing names, and you know, there's lots of people in there who work really hard. Kahoot, exactly. Who work really hard, and they're all driving towards a kind of single mission. You know, I also. We're also investors in Zapmap. I sit on the board of Zapmap. You know, people like Mel, from Zapmap. You know, she's been in this industry for far longer than I have, and you know, continues to be so, you know, passionate and driving force in the industry. So, there's lots and lots of people in the industry who inspire me, not just a kind of single person.
I've got a
and you guys, of course.
Oh, now stop it. Got a very quick follow-up, Tom, which is, do you have a natural bent towards one element of your business? So some of us it's finance, some of us it's marketing, some of us it's IT. With you being that MD role and you have wide responsibility, do you naturally find there's a little corner where you're extra nerdy?
I think one of the reasons... Hopefully, I'm good at my job is because I appreciate I'm actually not very good at any of the areas, right? I'm not, you know, an expert at anything.
Yeah, whatever.
But I think the one where I like to get involved, I'm probably not welcome to be involved, but I like to get involved is product. I find that really interesting, and I find people, good product people, are amazing, and they're so, you know, they're so hard to come by, and. The amount of ground that they cover, if you've got a really true product person end to end, all the way from, you know, kind of designing the product and then actually the whole go to market and just bringing a thing to life, that's the area that really interests me. What I'm better at, unfortunately for me, is the kind of nerdy finance side of things. I come from a kind of M&A background, so you know, Excel spreadsheets and budgets and stuff is what I can do, which again is helpful to the team because I can take that kind of away and try and get the kind of investment. But the area that interests me, I would say, is probably the product side of things.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I can second that. Strategists make excellent MDs for precisely that reason. It's sort of wanting to understand everything and having the mental capacity to get involved in everything. And actually, almost contrary to that question, there is no element that you don't want to know about or that doesn't interest you. But I do love an engineer. Engineers are my absolute favorite humans because they're either super blunt and there's almost a beauty in that, slightly painful sometimes, or they're just these incredibly deep thinkers that you can, as long as you tap into the correct vein, you've suddenly got a complete mine of information there. And product is no different. I was saying to one of ours at Paythrough, you know, I'm looking to you to bring me those gaps. You need to tell us what you think is lacking. What have you seen? What have you heard? And how do you inspire that kind of inquiring mind within your teams? And where does yours come from? I want to understand where you worked this out for yourself from. Was it your parents? Was it university? Tell us all about it.
Yeah, no, and agree with that. I think engineers can be pretty interesting people. We've got some within the EV team, and they're just incredibly knowledgeable, but just beautifully blunt. I love sometimes the way that they just say, "How don't you understand this? This is so basic." And then you look at like the Matrix, and you get very confused. So I guess where my stuff came from really was probably my consulting days. So like I said, I was in M&A. So I spent 10 years plus at KPMG and Deloitte. So that led me into all sorts of funky places, a chicken slaughtering factory in Norway, you know, SAB InBev merger in New York. So it's all sorts of different industries, all sorts of different roles in being a consultant. So I looked across operations, I looked across finance, because obviously within an acquisition and an integration, you have, you know, the finance work stream, you've got the ops work stream, you've got the HR work stream. And then when you're across lots of different M&A pieces, you get to be in one of those work streams. So you actually get to go relatively deep. So you can figure out whether you're into finance or into HR or whatever else. So that to me was a great grounding. And it also, that also meant, I don't think I would have struggled to kind of just go into a role where I do the same thing every day, because in consulting, every day was different. I was in a different office, client site. I was in a different industry. I was looking at a different function. So when I spoke to Alan about joining Corpay, the strategy piece was, you know, super interesting to me, because it meant I could do, you know, more than one thing every day and look across lots of different stuff. So I think consulting is the answer as to what led me to be how I am today.
A common misconception about strategy as well that I've noticed is, well, hang on, why are we changing it? Why are we changing the strategy? And I'm like, you have to change the strategy. That's the whole point of strategy. Yeah. You keep an eye on the future. You keep an eye on what's coming down the track. And I liken it to the classic sort of risk playing. If you're playing that stupid board game, you don't just keep going into battle because you set your mind to going into battle. You go around. You find a way to go around the problem that you've encountered. And communication is everything there, because otherwise you're planning a route that's not going to work, even if you end up upsetting people by pointing that out. Like, it's our job to kind of be real as well. And I think you've got this lovely manner about you, Tom, where I can imagine that even if you're about to deliver the worst news that a particular product isn't going to be taken forward, they'll just forgive you and keep going. It's a really impressive skill. Congratulations.
Thanks. And I'm not sure that my messaging on negative things is always as easy as this, but I fully agree with you. I think the best strategists are the ones who are willing to change the strategy, because that's actually the hardest thing, right? Just continuing to do the same thing is relatively easy versus making some of those more difficult decisions to stop something. So what we try to do within the EV team is we have a year strategy and kind of like a vision, a North Star for that year. But then we do quarterly rock planning, right? So in Q1, we plan our rocks for Q1, and then we start to think about what our rocks for Q2 might look like. And it's amazing. If you kind of look at the Q1 rocks I had for this year and the Q1 rocks we just set for next year, it's just totally different. It looks like a different business because things have changed, right? And things do change over the course of a year, and you have to be able to pivot and change whilst keeping your eye on the North Star of what you want that strategy to be, which is to be, you know, the best EMSP in Europe.
Which we now know is e-mobility service provider.
E-mobility service provider, exactly.
And the other
still don't know what API means though.
Well, we've got that. Well, John looked it up for you. It's application programming interface, obviously.
I know, but I keep forgetting it.
Essentially what that means is it's loads of rules and protocols that allow software to speak to each other. It's real simple.
Exactly.
Plug it in. But data is a huge part of your business, right? Millions of fuel transactions happen every single year, and that's how we've come to cross paths because, of course, we're transitioning to EV transactions, and that's going to have major implications on roaming and future tech. Like, not a day goes by where people don't try to tell me that the things we're trying to solve will be irrelevant when we've got plug and charge. And I'm like, let's just stop there. There's quite a few other additional issues that plug and charge is going to present. Now, what are you doing about it? How do you play in this plug and charge role?
Yeah, so agreed. Data's huge. But again, data you hold is only as good as what you kind of do with it, right? Which I think is what Sam was talking about the other day, right? It's got to lead to something
totally
actionable. Otherwise, it's just interesting to look at. And I spent, when I first came to Corpay, it was interesting. I started Tableau was kind of new. So I just started building Tableau dashboards, which had no purpose, but I found them interesting. It was like, you know, a big spot of loads of fuel transactions over here. And then I presented it and people were like, and I was like, I don't really know. So that's when I started to think, yeah, you've got to really think this through before you start playing with data and presenting kind of pretty dashboards. But back to Plug and Charge, we do it. So we have launched Plug and Charge with Polestar. So Polestar 3 and Polestar 4 is Plug and Charge enabled. So we enable that through Plug Surfing. But of course, we have to work, and we do work closely and happily with Hubject, because Hubject are the kind of standard setter in the protocols for Plug and Charge. So yes, we've started, but I fully agree with you, Sarah. It's the very, very beginning of it, right? There's whether the CPOs themselves are capable of doing it, whether the vehicles are able to do it. But then there's also all of the underlying issues that we have anyway, which are not solved by Plug and Charge, right? You know, correct CDRs, tariff modules being set up wrong or right, dynamic pricing that we spoke about the other day, all these kind of things, you know, payment working, which is obviously a big part of what you guys are doing.
Multi-drivers as well. We keep pointing this out. It's all very well if you've got the driver and the car, but what if you have a van that's shared by multiple people? Which cost center is that going to? How do you authenticate that charge? How do you make sure it's the correct person? How do you fight fraud? You know, it's not this silver bullet yet that everyone thinks, but the future is now. We have to get ready now. And it's very, very interesting to hear your view.
Yeah, no, agree. So for me right now, it's more of a feature. It's not solving the underlying issues, and other things have to solve the underlying issues. And then Plug and Charge could be a really interesting feature on top of that, but it doesn't actually solve a lot of the core issues. So I agree with you. And I think we're at the very, very beginning of Plug and Charge. And actually, I think Plug and Charge is a cool feature, but does it change the world? Not really, because, you know, you're going to be there for a while anyway. So is it that hard to kind of get out of your car and tap a card or use your app? No, not for me, maybe for some people. But I do think it will evolve and it will help. But right now, I think it's a feature.
Tom, you spoke about solving problems. And being a data analyst-y type nerdy person, this
I don't think that's how I describe myself, but thank you.
No,
but,
describe now.
I apologize.
That's how I'll forever be known.
It takes one to know one. Let it be known. It takes one to know one.
this flight of fancy I'm about to bring your way probably won't work, but we like to give people a magic wand to solve problems in their world. If you could wave a magic wand to solve a really gritty issue that you maybe have wrestled with for some time, or that society is wrestling with around EVs, what would you want to solve?
This does bring me back. Just before the podcast, we were talking about my favorite podcast, the Off-Menu podcast, where there's a genie who allows you to kind of eat whatever you want. So this is a bit like that. So it's quite exciting for me to have a magic wand. So can there be two things?
Go for it. Seeing as it's you.
Okay. So in terms of the nitty-gritty, and I think we just kind of talked about it a little bit, I would say, you know, this kind of data and standardization in terms of how we as EMSPs and CPOs talk to each other, right? So the whole adhering to a real standard in OCPI, data quality, just everything kind of working in that space. Because I think what a lot of people don't understand is the amount of work that companies like ours have to put in into what we call roaming ops. So I have a team of about 25 people in roaming ops, looking at failed CDRs, looking at, you know, incorrect information coming to us over OCPI. Hey, this charger actually doesn't exist, or the coordinates are wrong and it's in the middle of a field, and you know, all this stuff. And when we've got 900,000 charge points on the network, that's a big piece of work. Indeed. Right? So we're trying to use AI to try and work through some of that stuff and clean up the data. But we spend a lot of time on that. That's not anyone's fault. That's just an industry thing that we're grappling with. So if I could wave my magic wand, that would be, you know, I'd love to clean all that up. In terms of society and EV, I guess, in general, and maybe this one will resonate with you guys, I'm not much of a LinkedIn person, as you've probably seen. I don't post a huge amount, but I go on LinkedIn quite a bit. And what I really don't love in EV is the polarization, right? And that's on both sides of things. I think there's the EV evangelists, which I think is great, but I think sometimes think they kind of talk down a little bit to people who don't want to be in EV, and I think actually that pushes people away, not pulls people in. So there's a bit of that, and then there's obviously, you know, all of the not fake news, but, you know, the mainstream media pushing against EV for whatever reason, and that's all equally unhelpful. So I think if I could wave my magic wand to make everyone very logical, very fact-based, and the conversation was just based on that, it sounds boring, but that's what I would do, which I think would actually ultimately help the transition, because I think people push their agenda for positive reasons, but I think actually sometimes it has a negative impact on people. I could imagine people I know reading that and going, oh, well, that's just an EV snob, so I'm not interested in that, and I'll just turn me off.
I've not even heard it's called EV. I wouldn't like to be an EV snob. But actually, we on the EV Cafe have been, well, since Carfest, actually, John.
Yes, exactly.
I've been very much pioneering. Yeah, we took the EV Cafe to Carfest when everybody said, you're mad. Why are you doing that? It's a massive consumer event. And we were like, well, you say that, but it's also where a lot of like MDs, decision makers, families go and to be there. We had the second largest tent. It completely blew my mind when I saw the work that John and Paul had pulled off to get that to happen. I'm hugely grateful even now. And what I learned there was I hate the phrase education. We do not need to educate people. We need to help them find the information they need. And there's a big difference. Yeah. One is very lectury with a waggy finger and red pen. And the other is very much about, and I liken it to if you go to a new village or place or town, you don't walk around saying, oh, where's the education center? You try and find the information center where you're going to get a warm welcome and a cup of tea and a map and a friendly chat. That is what I want for the EV Cafe community. That would also be my magic wand. What about you, John? What's your magic wand?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to develop this a little because I have learned that cars, vans, vehicles matter to people. Over the years that I've been doing this, I thought it was all about EVs and forget everything else. Everything else was dirty. And what I've realised is that we all have a need to move people and things about. And if we're inclusive and if we try to work together to be the most efficient we can be in whatever it is we do and whatever it is we drive, we'll just make small incremental steps every day to take us in the right direction. And I'd much prefer to be in an environment where I'm talking to people, I'm learning stuff, I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and I'm developing my own thinking to make my decisions. And if that works for me, it's likely to work for others. And I think we are all busy agreeing with each other that actually the waggy finger, forget it. It doesn't work. We have got to make it happen because we want to and because it's right for us.
No, and I think the EV Cafe has been a pioneer in that more fun, inclusive, you know, approach, you know, and making it enjoyable, right? Because if it's entertaining, we know entertainment works, right? That's why Top Gear was so popular for so long, right? With, you know, whether you like it or not, Jeremy Clarkson, but it was it was entertaining, and that's why so many people watched it. So I think making it fun, approachable, entertaining is actually the way to go.
Imagine versus, that EV yeah. Cafe and Top Gear in the same sentence.
Well, I'd almost rather. I have a stronger affinity to the Grand Tour. Actually, if we're gonna go there, that ability to deliver. It's all scripted, of course it's scripted, but they deliver it in such a way that it doesn't feel like that. And the same, you know, our camaraderie in having All Star and therefore Corpe as part of our community has been a huge boost for us on the basis that it's something we didn't have represented. And we work quite hard to make sure that its representation is strong. So that whether that's a vehicle thing or a card thing or a payment thing or technology thing, that's what we're striving for. I do love the idea that even if it's super fun and you're wonderful with your team, as long as you don't find any dartboards with your picture on it, you know you're doing a pretty good job of delivering the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's plenty of dartboards with my face on it somewhere. As long as I don't know about it, it's fine.
But John is absolutely right. Transport is hugely emotive. You know, this is my 20th year in transport infrastructure. I've always been very obvious with my pathway. It's a mission I've been on all this time. Because of that, it touches everyone's lives. And something I'm really championing at the moment is that end-to-end thing. We always talk about the cars or the vans or the vehicles or the hardware or the installation or the wiring or the connection. We so seldom talk about how terrible things are with the other end, with signal on people's mobile phones, which means they can't pay with their app like they'd hoped to, or perhaps they haven't got the right card and therefore they're excluded from using that charge point. That's the stuff that's coming over the hill. That's the content we need to get to the bottom of so that people don't have it in their face when they finally made that great step.
No, agreed. And again, being nerdy on the topic, when I was coming back from Helsinki.
Let it go.
Never. From Heathrow to home, because my flight was so delayed, I took an Uber. And I was talking to the Uber driver who was driving a Mercedes E-Class or something. And it was very emotive. You know, he loved his car. He loved his Mercedes. He said, maybe I would drive a BMW, but you wouldn't catch me in an E-Niro, right? And I said, why? And he said, not because it's an EV, but because he just doesn't, you know, he likes Mercedes and he likes BMWs and whatever else. But that was an interesting conversation because he was so passionate and so emotional about what he was driving. And it was a status thing for him in terms of, you know, this is the car that I drive and this kind of tells people who I am and what I'm about. So that was quite interesting. I think I convinced him to buy an EV by the end of the journey.
Oh, good man.
Fantastic.
he was looking at buying a BMW i5 by the end. So hopefully he'll soon be in that.
I spent time in the i5 touring on the EV rally this year, five days, and it was utterly brilliant. But it's just a vehicle. And that's the greatest thing I can say about it. You get into it, you drive it, it does a job brilliantly. It's superb, great fun. Tom, it's been really, really fabulous to speak to you today. One final thought. Anything that you would say to people listening that might open their minds to exploring EV?
Just try one. To your point, they're just wonderful. You know, I've been in an EV for 3.5 years, and The driving experience itself is fantastic. Don't be nervous about the range. Don't be nervous about the infrastructure. That is all solvable. So try one. If you like it, then just do a bit more research into the practicalities of owning one. There's plenty of, resources there now to help you use it on a day-to-day basis. And yeah, just try it.
Quite right. Sarah, any final thoughts?
Yeah, just along those lines, really. Just try it and be open. Don't listen to the scaremongering. Please, please don't. And obviously, I do keep an eye, part of my strategic brain is to keep an eye on what I call the topical barometer, the temperature check out there. And I just never tire of the wars on Facebook of people saying, oh, I tried that, it didn't work, don't touch it with a barge pole. You just kind of need to change that narrative a little bit by going, sure, don't go back there, try something else, though, because there's just so much choice. It is not a single pathway. There's every possible conceivable way to access this market, and please just go ahead.
It's interesting. I was just thinking about relationships, and actually, if you had a relationship, your first relationship at school, and it didn't work out, you don't just say, oh no, I'm never going to date again. You say, I'm going to go and try something else. I'm going to keep looking for the right, I was going to say right fit, right person. Let's go there. Anyway.
I just found all my love letters from when I was about 14 years old, and they are comedy. So I'd say that I've luckily changed a lot since then. Oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
And John, you might have just helped one person who actually did give up after that first one and is now realizing they shouldn't have done so. That's possible.
Wow.
If one of our listeners did
what
that.
What a lovely thought. What a lovely thought. Lonely just... hearts for future Evie.
Listen, this has been an absolute blast and just brilliant, Tom. Thank you so, so much for taking the time out of your massively busy schedule for this. Really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. You'll find a whole range of other podcast interviews on our website at evcafe.org/podcasts or on social media. And you can search the EV Cafe Takeaway on your favourite podcast platform, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, to find almost 100 such interviews where we talk to industry leaders about what makes them tick. Until next time, thank you, Tom. Thank you to you, and thanks from us. See you later. Yeah. Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.